Go ahead.
Okay, my sister tell me we moved in, lived in three or four different places up here, but I think about 3 years old, we moved up on Grandpa Hoffman's place, and he used to run dairy, as Dorothy probably told you.
Yeah, the barn is still there, right?
Yeah. My dad finished the dairy. We moved up there, and he run the dairy until they got so many downtown, you hear, you know, that he finally quit it. So we moved down here in June of 1933.
Here being where?
Huh?
What's here? What does here mean? To
right
this
here,
house? To this
well,
house?
Well, no, not in this house. There was another house here. The old house that we moved into had no lights, no water. We had to pack water from across the street from the old courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Summertime, wintertime, whatever.
Do you know when that house had been built?
It was built in 1895. It went on the tax roll in 1895.
Mm.
And we could have kept it as a historian place. But after my folks passed away, I didn't want some college kids in front of me. Dad needed me this property back here. And I didn't want any bunch of girls or a bunch of boys, you know, and having this and that and the other thing. So we just tore the old place down. And my sister lives right next to me. And as I say, we packed water from across the street, and Mom had the old boiler up on the stove, you know. We had to keep that full of water for baths, for dishes, mop the floors. We took two baths a week on Thursday and Sunday. And
men first?
If I recollect, I'm the baby. I got a brother and two sisters older than I am. And I believe that I took the first bath, then the rest of them followed me. That's the way they done it then.
Because you had to use the water for more
right.
than one person.
Right, you well, better
sure.
believe it.
Sure.
So anyway, we got along that good, and it was probably, oh, I would say 2 or 3 years, but we used to pack the old coil oil lamps. We had 2 or 3 of them. We packed them from room to room, you know. In the wintertime, we had the old flat irons. We would heat up, take the bed with us, wrap them in papers. And there was one big bedroom. My two sisters slept down there, and my brother and I slept up here. So Mom and Dad had the other room there. And anyway, it was probably another 2 years before we got water to the house. Just got one pipe of water to the house, you know.
The time you're talking about here is the 1930s, isn't it?
Right.
Because you were born in 1927.
1927.
Right.
So this is, we moved here in 33, and this is after 1933. Probably 34, 35, mm-hmm. along in there.
Were there several other houses in LeGrand where people were living the same way?
Oh, yeah. We had houses here behind us that was the same way mm-hmm. over here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, none of these houses was here, see. There was a house across the street here, the courthouse, and the old stagecoach barn, which had an old stagecoach in it when I was 7 years old. And there was another big building there, had a big sign on it, dry goods. So this was the main part of the town up here, see.
Did you call it Old Town then?
Oh yeah, you bet we did.
Well,
it was Old Town.
Hadn't it been called Brown Town at one time?
Well, I don't recollect that, no. It could have been. I remember that name. But we call it Old Town.
Yeah. Of course, the new part of LeGrand was constructed by them.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I don't believe they'd done anything down there until the railroad came in 89, somewhere along in there.
1894 is when it came through, I think.
Okay. But I don't believe there was anything down there until after the railroad came in.
Yeah.
But did Dorothy show you the picture of the old town that I gave her?
No, I don't think so.
I gave her a picture of the old town up here. I've got another.
The way it looked when you lived here, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave down at the Minor Touch has printed up a real nice one. In other words, the old picture I have, it has names of people what building it was, but Dave has drew in on them and
hello,
got a real good picture and a real good print out of what the place was.
Huh.
But I gave Dorothy a picture. I thought maybe she'd show it to you.
She probably will.
Yeah. So anyway, then on, I don't know, just everyday living with kids, you know, and stuff like this. And then back here, at the end of the street was a greenhouse, Rohan's Greenhouse. Mm-hmm. They had a shop downtown.
Mm-hmm. And Pat Fitzgerald bought it.
Well, I'm not too sure about that. Maybe you know more about it than
I. Yeah, I've interviewed him and he told me about it.
He bought Rohan's.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, times were tough then. We were poor. Nobody had any money.
What was your father doing then?
Well, Dad was sick quite a bit. He spent a lot of time in the veterans hospital in Walla Walla.
Had he been a World War One vet?
Yeah, he was in World War One.
Is that where he became
disabled? Well, probably some of it was, but I think a lot of it he got sick from other. Mm-hmm. And he finally got back on his feet, and we started raising a few chickens for our own use, and over in front of the old courthouse there, he planted all that in garden. And across the street, across the creek, was another big plot. And he planted that all in potatoes. So we had lots of vegetables that Mom canned every year, you know.
Did he own the land?
No, he rented it, got it from, Russell lived in the old courthouse. Now, the old courthouse was courthouse then, but when we moved here, it was downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And
so a family had moved in.
Right, yeah. The L.H. Russell place, they call it the L.H. Russell place then.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad got it from them, and they let him use it, and then they used vegetable stuff off of it for use of him doing it. So then Mom got to work in the greenhouse, and if I remember right, she made about $1 a day, which was pretty good bucks then, you know.
What was she doing?
Well, I'd make some bolt manure and doing everything, you know, around the greenhouse.
Uh-huh.
And planting flowers, and they'd done a lot of tomatoes. And down around decoration day, they sold a lot of boxes and stuff like that. And so then when Dad finally got back on his feet, why, we started raising, like I say, chickens and rabbits, and he got a cow, and we had pigs now and then we would have a calf every year from the cow, you know, and we would raise that for food in the wintertime. And, of course, wood was a big project then, you know. You had to have wood in the wintertime because there was no other heat.
Where were you getting the wood?
Well, you had to buy it. There was the Harrison brothers. There was Tom, Bill, and Sam. And they lived back on Glass Hill. You know where Blizzard Flat is?
No.
Well, you go on back past Morgan Lake, about 4 miles. And they had three old cabins. They built three cabins, so they'd each live in one cabin. So they would cut cordwood and haul it downtown for sale. Then Mom started buying two or three cords of that. And my brother and I, we had the old buck, you know, to put a piece of wood on. But we had to cut some of that wood every morning before we went to school, so we could have it cut up. So then the mill out here started having boxwood for sale. And so Mom started buying that.
Which mill do you mean?
Well, it was Mount Emmy Mill then.
Mm-hmm. Where the Boise Cascade is now.
Yeah, where Boise Cascade is now, yeah. So then...
Now, when they had boxwood, what did they mean by that?
Well, the boxwood come from the planer, but the other wood they called mill wood come right out of the mill. It was in, cut off of boards and stuff like that.
With the bark on it?
Yeah. They didn't use everything then like they do now. They didn't. So.
Boxwood then was scraps?
Well, yeah, it was the same thing. It was off of boards that weren't the right length, you know, and stuff like that. And that's the same way the mill wood was. And they would, they had a chute, they backed the truck up under and they would drop the chute in this truck, and then they would haul maybe a half a cord or something like that at the most, you know. And I think that, if I remember right, it was around $7 a load, because my grandparents used to live right across the street here, and they got wood too, you know, like everybody else did. And if I remember right, it was $7 a cord. But that's the way life went, and as we grew up, us kids, we would try and get a job of any way we could, you know, to make a buck. Or I worked for 2 bits an hour, and I think everybody else in kids, too, would work for whatever they could get, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff like this. We had
when the truck came and dumped the load of wood, was it your job then to stack it, or did you have to cut it more?
No. It was all cut up in about 16 inch blocks, mm-hmm. and then it was my job to stack it up. I got the job all of that, but that was no big deal.
And that was the only means your parents and grandparents had for keeping the house warm?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Usually with one stove in the house?
One stove in the house was all. Yeah. So the house that we had over there wasn't very big until Dad got back on his feet and started building onto it. He built a room back on the back end where he built a bathroom into it when we got water and everything. And
when you got water, was that through the city's efforts, or did you have a well, or how did you do it?
We had two wells here when we moved. Yeah. There was a well right out here and a well on my sister's place that she has now. And Dad filled that well up for some unknown reason. It was plumb full of water. And he filled it clear up full of junk and everything, you know, to get rid of it.
Do you know how deep he would have had to go to dig the well?
Well, the well over my sister's place was about 20 feet deep.
20 feet?
Yeah. Huh. When they finally got rid of it, my brother-in-law pulled the pipe out, and it was a good 20 feet.
Huh. And had that been hand-dug, do you think?
Well, I'm sure it was hand-dug.
Was it lined in any way with any kind of brick or other material?
We couldn't tell. Nobody paid any attention to that. All he done was pull the pipe out and get rid of it.
Well, would the method then, do you think, have been to hand dig it and then put a pipe down and then fill it in around the pipe?
Well, I would think that was probably the way it was done. Mm-hmm.
With a pump on it,
yeah,
of course.
Right, yeah. Well, the pump was in the old house. There was an old house sitting there, and the pump was in the house.
The pipe just went from the well?
Right.
Was that the way it was originally done, or was that a later idea?
No, that was the way it was originally done. Now, you've seen these old movies of they just got the old pump. Well, that's the way this was. Mm-hmm. That's all they had for water was the old hand pump.
But I've often seen the pump outside, not in the house.
Well, this was in the house. He had it right next to a sink there, or a tub, or whatever you catch water in, you know.
Good water?
Oh, yeah, good water. You bet.
Could you get it all year long equally well?
Yeah, it was there all year long.
Must have tapped into an aquifer then.
Well, it could have been. We get a lot of drainage off this hill, so I imagine there, you know, probably a lot of water and everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then we finally got city water, and then we was on our feet then.
Well, it wasn't any better water, was it?
Well, no.
And furthermore, you had to pay for it.
There you go. But just backing across the street 365 days a year got old. So anyway, so was life.
And you said we were poor, but did you really feel poor?
No.
Because you had plenty of food?
We had plenty of food.
What did you do for clothing?
We got clothes from, WPA, or some. I remember wearing overalls to school that we got from somewhere, and we used to get a little food from them also. Whether the WPA or just what it was, I don't remember. But we did get food.
You think it was from the government rather than from some charitable organization?
No, it was from the government. Mm-hmm. And then I got these overalls, like I say. And then, of course, Dad finally got a job with the county, Union County, for $100 a month. And boy, we was really living then for $100 a month, you know. And every payday, we would go downtown, and Mom would take us all down and take us out to eat. And there was a little place called the Shake Switch Shop. Shake Switch Shop.
Shake Switch. Where did that name come from?
It was right across the alley from where the Zimmerman store is now.
Yeah.
It was right across the alley in the middle of the block there.
The Shake Switch
Shop. Switch Shop.
You have to be careful the way you pronounce that.
Right on. Yeah. So we would get that once a month. We would get a hamburger and a milkshake for 25 cents.
This was your treat?
This was our treat. Yes, sir. So, and then, you know.
What else did you spend all this lavish money on?
Well, we didn't have any furniture. or anything, you know. Dad had no car. We walked everywhere we went. And finally, Dad got an old 34 Chevrolet. And then he traded it in on a 37 Plymouth. And then eventually we went to an old 41 Nash.
All these used cars, I suppose?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. All used cars. Yeah, nobody could afford a new car.
Why did he or you think that you needed a car? Was your life very much different from what it had been when you were walking around?
No, no, it wasn't any different, but it was just the idea you had wheels to go somewhere and do something.
Did that make you feel as though you were more important?
Yeah, right. It made us feel like we was living and maybe a little bit better off.
So that was an aim that people had? They didn't like not having very many things?
Well, yeah, I just like... Anybody, you know, you try to better yourself all the time.
Yeah, but if there weren't a lot of other people around here who were in much better condition than you, why would you feel as though you'd need something more?
Nobody was any better off than we were. I mean, there were no cars, you know. But that's the way the human is, isn't it?
Well, maybe. Do you think that you or your father were influenced by any kind of advertising?
Oh, I don't think so, no.
Because advertising is one of the main ways to make people think that they need something that they didn't know they needed before.
I hear you. But my sister and brother used to work, and they started buying furniture for my folks. They bought an old Davenport and...
You mean furniture that you didn't want to use anymore?
Right. Mm-hmm. Over Mama Sita's place used to be. Mm-hmm. That used to be Turn's second-hand furniture, Max Turn.
Was that after Penny's left?
Yeah. Well, was Penny's in that building?
Yeah.
They were?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know that. That was.
I think it still says that on the bricks up at the top.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, you get around more than I do, I guess.
Well, I'm talking to a lot of people.
Yeah, right. So anyway, we would dig up bottles or whatever we could, and we'd get down there on Saturday and turn these bottles into Max Turn for cash, or he'd give us a dollar or whatever, you know.
Well, see, what would he do with them?
Well, I think he'd probably use them for kerosene and stuff like that. People would come in and buy kerosene or whatever, you know, and mm-hmm. he would use these bottles for that.
Mm-hmm.
And anything we could get a hold of.
Sounds like a salvage shop.
Yeah, that's about what, besides they had this furniture, see.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, my brother and sister bought quite a bit of furniture for Mom and Dad from old Max Turn. And then eventually, Werner Hildebrandt went to work for him. And that's where Werner Hildebrandt got into Zimmerman's, through Max Turn.
Mm-hmm. Max Turn, is it T-U-R-N?
Yes. And Werner Hildebrandt was related to me some way, shape, or form. And I probably related to about everybody in town.
I've heard that from several people.
Yeah. Well, the Bucketts over at Cove, Dad was related to them.
Bucketts?
Yeah.
B-U-C-K-E-T?
Mm-hmm. Right. Hmm. E-double-T.
That's a name I have not heard.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we was related to them somehow. I don't know how you're doing there.
Fine.
Yeah, plenty of time. So I don't know, what do we need now? Going to school?
Well, let's go back to the Hoffman Dairy.
All right.
You said you remembered that from your earliest childhood?
Yeah.
When you were three or four, five years old?
Probably 3 years old.
Mm-hmm. You didn't live up there.
Yes.
Did you?
We lived there for 2 or 3 years, taking care of the dairy.
In the house that the Fleshmans live in now.
Right.
Yes, only it was smaller then.
What did Dorothy tell you about the dance hall?
Well, just that it was there, and Bessie Knapp told me a little bit about going up there. But what do you remember about it?
Well, this was right along or right after Prohibition Day, you see. The booze was blowing like mad. There was no still up above there. And every Saturday night, they would have a big dance there.
The Hoffmans?
Dad, my dad, and mother. Mom would play the piano, Dad played the banjo and he had a mouth harp, you know. And one night I got up out of bed for some unreason, and I got scared and I walked up to the dance hall from Dorothy's up to the dance hall. And man, the roof was just going up and down. They were just having a gay time, you know.
Were your parents doing this to earn some money?
Well, they done that to raise a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Plus, so people would have something to do.
But they charge admission, right?
I couldn't tell you about. Okay. I just don't know whether they did or not. So anyway, at midnight, Mom would make a bunch of sandwiches and coffee. Then they would all, I think they were probably, everybody were too drunk to drink coffee anyway.
Did but they anyway, make a few side trips to the still, do you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
You know where the road goes up to R.D. Mack? Just above Dorothy's. You cross the creek there and go left.
No, I didn't know R.D. Mack was up there.
Well, he used to live up there. Where their house is, you went in the back way when you went up there?
Yes.
Okay, when you come out, if you looked up there, there's a road that cuts off to the left. Mm-hmm. And he's got that paved. I'm sure he lives up there. He's got a paved clear up his house. Anyway, we used to call that the old Bear Trail. That was the old road up Glass Hill before the Three C's built a new one. So on up there, probably a good mile from Dorothy's, there was a great big hole in the ground and bottles scattered all over. There had to be a still there of some kind. And so I'm sure that there was, but there was a lot of that went on in them days.
Okay, back to the dance hall where the roof was about to come off.
So this happened every weekend. It did. But like I say, that one time I went up there, got in on the scene, what was going on, but I was too young to know anything.
Do you remember seeing any fights?
No, I didn't remember seeing anything.
A lot of cussing?
Well, I just don't remember, Gene. Okay. I didn't. Do I call you Gene or Eugene?
Eugene.
Okay. It just happened like that I got scared or something and walked up there in the dark. And everybody was dancing, having a gay time and everything like that, you know. And I think Mom took me back home and put me to bed. And but
how did people get up there? Did they walk?
They had old cars.
Cars.
Yeah, the old cars. And there wasn't very much parking place there. And after the dance, the next day on Sunday, you would walk up there and there would be cars back door of the bank and stuff like that. You know, they'd have to get somebody to pull them out and all that stuff.
They weren't in very good driving condition at midnight
no,
or after.
No, right. I wouldn't think so.
Who do you think built that dance hall?
My grandfather, Rich Hoffman.
Did he build it as
tell you that?
If he did, I've forgotten.
Oh, okay.
Did he build it as a dance hall?
Yes, he did. It was round.
Round?
As round as could be.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then at the foot of the place there was a garage. And there was also a chicken house out on the hill by the barn. So Dorothy didn't tell you all this stuff.
No, she didn't go into a lot of detail.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So the Hoffman Dairy, it doesn't look like the best kind of grazing land up there. Did the cows just go wandering up the hill?
Yes. Grandpa had all that country there up above the Fleshman's, clear back to what we call a waterhouse hill. That big hill back there. And that was all grazing for the cows. It was.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would have to buy hay in the summertime. I don't think they were well. There was a plot of ground up there that, I think he raised potatoes there. I don't remember them raising any hay there. But I believe he had to buy hay in the summertime for the cattle.
Mm-hmm. Would that be a somewhat more difficult place to have cows in a dairy than, say, down on the flatland in the valley?
Yes, it was, because in the wintertime, you couldn't hardly get in and out.
Yeah.
They had the old wagon drawn by a horse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to have tough winters in this.
I know.
Did.
Why did he choose that place for a dairy then?
Well, that's a good question. I do not know why he did that. Mm-hmm. But he had three sons, four daughters, four, probably five.
When do you think he had come to Union County?
Well, they migrated to Ellis Island in 95.
From Switzerland. From Switzerland.
Bern, Switzerland. And they come on across, and they stopped in Idaho somewhere. And then they come on to LeGrand, and how he ever got up there, I have no idea.
Do you know why he thought he should come from Ellis Island to the Grand Ronde Valley?
I have no idea.
He never left any records for why they made that choice?
Back then, people didn't pay any attention to keeping records. My mother and one of my aunts was sitting out here on the patio one day talking about all this stuff. And had we had one of these, we would have really got some good stuff.
Yes, I'll bet you would.
Nobody had anything like this, see? And why they migrated clear here to Oregon, I do not know.
You think they came without any money?
Well, they had to have a little money, didn't they, to get to Ellis Island?
It would seem so.
Yeah. He was a watchmaker in Switzerland, Grandpa Hoffman.
So you have no idea why he wanted to leave Switzerland?
I have no idea. He has one daughter left. Whether she could tell anything or not, Mildred Baker, but Dorothy mentioned her to you.
I know that name, yes.
Yeah. Well, she might be able to tell you more about them than I could, but she is the only one left.
Apparently, though, he didn't do watchmaking once he got here.
No.
Had he ever farmed before?
Well,
I don't know.
I just don't know.
Okay.
And then they got the idea to build this store down here, and that when they moved into the store, then we moved up on the hill to take care of the dairy until it ran out. So.
When did the dairy quit?
Well, we moved down here in 33, so that was about the end of it. We did have milk calves at Lovin's Dairy. It wasn't Hoffman's anymore, it was Lovin's Dairy. And it had to quit about 1933 because that's when we moved down here.
And, do you recall your father saying that he just wasn't able to make enough money out of it, or was it too hard, or what was his reason?
I believe it was probably too much work for him.
Yeah.
It was. Where Grandpa had these sons, you know, to help him and everything. And, of course, Dad had me and my other brother, but then I was just a little pumped by then, you know, and couldn't do much or anything.
Uh-huh.
I believe he was probably tired of it, and he wanted to get down off the hill and get down here and work a little bit better life, I don't know. Like I say, had we had something like this, we could have got all together.
Yes, there are a lot of stories that are never going to be recovered.
You better believe
that's
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like you to talk in as much detail as you can about Old Town, both what you remember of it as a young boy and a little later. It's the kinds of activities that you observe going on around here. And then the changes in those activities.
Well, I don't believe that there was really much activity going on because we were just young kids going to school, and we were getting in all the mischief we could, you know, and stuff like this. And
Bill Talbot tells me about a lot of mischief that was going on in Old Town. That was when he was a teenager, primarily.
There you go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like I say, there were a lot of mischief going on, but I was too young and didn't get in on a lot of it.
Okay.
I heard a lot of stories from some of the boys, Ed Taylor and some of them boys, Naps, and I told my older brother was in on some of it too.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother kept a pretty good rein on us kids.
Uh-huh.
She done all the straightening out, you know.
Yeah,
Dad
yeah.
didn't monkey with us.
Mm-hmm.
What Mom said, you better do.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any sense when you were growing up that Old Town was where LeGrand really began?
No, we didn't. We never paid a bit of attention to it. Because part of the new town was there then, you know.
Were you aware that the Oregon Trail people had gone through here?
Oh, yeah, we knew that.
How did you know that?
Well, number one, there was this monument up here on the hill.
That's a giveaway.
Yeah. And when we was kids, we'd play on that hill everywhere. And there were still tracks going up that hill where they went up to Iron Table Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Did you find any things that had been tossed overboard?
No.
I understand that there are quite a few graves on up a ways.
There probably is. there probably is, yeah. But like I say, we were just kids playing and getting into mission. We wasn't paying any attention to that. Fred Beeman, the grandmother, evidently come across somewhere or somehow, and he would tell me a lot of this stuff. Now, this road out in front of the house did not used to be there when the wagon train come through. Mm-hmm. They had to make the corner here and go up here on these flats up here where Dad had for cows, and that's where they rested before they went up over the hill. Mm. And he would tell me about some of this stuff, and he gave me some pictures.
Okay.
So I don't even, I probably couldn't find a picture to save my soul from now. But everybody thinks that the wagon train went up here, but this hill was all full of big boulders. And when people started building, then they took the boulders for the yard, stuff like that. And that road goes up C Street and comes around was not there. They built that later. Mm-hmm. But like I say, they had to come around, make this corner here, go up by where the greenhouse was, and make another sharp corner there, and then go up on the hill. And that's where they stayed for 3 or 4 days until they all got up on the hill.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about how it was living in this part of the valley during the really snowy and cold times. You've already spoken about the heat and the difficulties there. And you had to walk to school.
We had to walk to school.
And any store that you ever visited, you had to walk to, I suppose. So, in a period when the snow was on the ground, maybe fairly deep, I suppose it would be for several weeks, did that change your way of living at all?
Yes, it changed my way of living because I didn't like it because I had to walk to school. Everybody did. But it was nothing to get 3 feet of snow up here in the wintertime, but especially between here and school. And, you know, we just had to tough it out. Mm-hmm. Everybody had to walk. Mm-hmm. And they did try to clean the sidewalks off so people could walk up and down the sidewalks. They had a little cat that went up and down the sidewalk. But, no, winter after winter, we had a lot of cold weather and a lot of snow and everything.
Do you remember standing outside, I'd say on a cold, clear day and looking out across the valley?
No, not really, I don't, Eugene. I just don't.
You mean you kept your eyes on the ground?
Right. Well, I don't know. I just, I never paid any attention to anything farther than I could see, I guess, you know. Uh-huh. And, yeah.
School in this case was the old central school building,
right,
where the middle school is now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that by that time, the Blue Mountain University that had been on the soccer field was gone.
Yeah.
Did you know that it had been there?
No, probably not.
Not a sign left of it.
No.
The St. Joseph's Hospital was there.
Yeah, they built
How
that.
How about the Sacred Heart Academy, which had been there previously, the old Catholic Church?
Well, the church was there, yeah.
The old one?
Well, no.
No, that was a wooden one.
Okay, no.
No.
I don't remember it.
Okay. Pat Fitzgerald remembers that because he went to Sacred Heart Academy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That burned up.
Uh-huh.
Probably very soon after you were born.
Okay.
So that's probably why you didn't know about it.
Right.
Yeah. You know. So at Central School, you went there for first grade.
I went there.
And from then on.
All through 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific memories of how kids behaved or how the teachers reacted toward you?
It seemed to me that all the kids got along real good. I don't remember, once in a while, some guy you'd want to beat you up for this or that, or you'd want to beat him up for, but I don't remember, I only seen one fight that I can remember of in high school. But everybody got along real good, and the teachers were real good, except I think it was in the 5th grade. We had a teacher named Mrs. Brown, and if she caught you chewing gum or eating candy in class, you would go up in front of the class and you would hold her hand out. She had a rule about 15 inches long, about that thick, and she would pop you 3 times in the palm of your hand, which didn't, I never did get it done because I couldn't afford the gum to chew. but there were two or three fellows that did, and she would pop you pretty good, and that was teaching not to chew any gum in her class.
What do you remember thinking about why that was so bad?
I never thought anything about it, Eugene.
Did the teachers do the same thing if you did talked a lot when you weren't supposed to?
No, they would just tell you to shut up or, you know, hush or, but that was the only bad thing that I can remember of, that chewing gum or eating candy or something like that, that she would get after you for.
Mm-hmm.
And what the big deal was, I don't know. But all the rest of the teachers that I can remember of were real good teachers, real nice people. And in the fourth grade, the teacher was, her name was Mrs. Mahaffey. And sometime along the line, she had gone with my dad. And she thought I was an okay guy, and this is the fourth grade. And I could carry a pretty good tune. And she would make me get up in front of the class and lead the class in singing. And I didn't care for that at all. But anyway, no, everybody got along good in school.
According to Pat Fitzgerald, who went to Central for a little while,
yeah,
and the Sacred Heart Academy and Ackerman, Central was the worst because the kids were rowdy and noisy most of the time.
Oh, that's
right.
He
said, yeah. And he had the sense that it was a school where it was mostly disorder.
Well, for heaven's sake.
That wasn't your impression.
No, it sure wasn't. Everything was good, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you probably remember knowing that the laboratory school was there on campus? Don't you?
Laboratory school?
Ackerman.
Oh, yeah.
It was called the laboratory school.
Okay. We called it Ackerman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it became after they had the separate building.
Okay.
First it was in what's now the administration building.
Yeah, yes.
I wondered if kids like you had any particular attitude about the kids who went to Ackerman.
Yes, we did.
Yes, you did?
We thought that was just the high mucky mucks.
Oh, yes?
That went over there, yeah.
They were somehow superior?
Well, that's what we figured they would be. The rich people, you know, and stuff like that, and the rest of it just poor people.
But did you know that it wasn't true?
No.
I guess you didn't.
No, I don't think it was.
Because Bessie Knapp, for example, no, she went to Riveria. I'm wrong about that. But Pat Fitzgerald went there, and I guess he didn't come from a family with any particular money or background.
No.
Well, I can see why some of the kids probably wouldn't have understood what that school was for.
Right.
And not just everybody went there. I guess you had to be selected.
Yeah.
It may have seemed somewhat like a private school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what we thought. Well, that's a high monkey month to get to go over there, you know, all that stuff.
When you got to be teenage, were you finding jobs you could do around town for money?
Yes. I used to mow lawns. I packed two paper routes, one in the morning, one at night. And, of course, we didn't make very much money, but anything we could make, you know, was a good deal. I mowed lawn for Dr. Hahn. He used to be on the corner of 4th and Spring. And he was kind of a family doctor, and my folks owed him money. So I would mow the lawn, you know, during the summertime. And I would get $10 a month, and I got $5 of it, and $5 went off on the bill that the folks owed him. So I didn't think too much of that, but then, you know, it still worked all right. I had a little bit of money. And
you mean you didn't like the idea of helping to pay off the doctor bills?
Well, I thought I should have more money, I guess.
Oh.
I don't know.
What were you thinking you needed to spend money on at that period? Girls?
No, hell, I didn't want to get girls.
Cars?
Up in high school. No, the only thing I can remember was buying a lot of was mostly candy or something like that, you know, just junk. But Rohan used to have a son. His name was Frank, and we ran around together a lot. And we used to make a lot of money working for his dad. And one, there was a carnival here one summer, and his dad had got some of this wood I was telling you about. And he said, if you boys will take that wood in the shed and rick it up, he said, I'll take it to carnival tonight and give you a dollar apiece to spend at the carnival. So boy, we right at it, and didn't take as long to get that wood in there, you know. So we went to the carnival that night, and I think we spent about 10 or 12 bucks apiece. We had more Cupid dolls you could pack in your arms.
That you won by shooting your targets?
Well, throwing balls, tipping over and winning on this and that and the other thing. But we had all kinds of Cupid dolls, so we was always after him to do something to make money. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't think they had a great lot of money, but he was willing to let the kids earn it, you know. I have two grandsons to help me cut wood. I give them money all the time. But I feel that I don't mind giving them money, but I feel like they should earn it. You know,
mm-hmm.
eventually you're going to have to get a job to earn money.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, we've done everything we could get a hold of for anything. I packed two paper routes. And,
the Oregonian and the Observer?
The Oregonian and the Observer. And there used to be a news telegram. And the Oregonian bought them out and turned it into the Oregonian.
Mm-hmm. How did you get your Oregonian papers?
Pardon me?
How did you get your papers?
I had to go down and get them.
From?
From the railroad. They come in on the train in the morning.
Where would they put them?
At the depot. They're at the depot. Yeah.
Oh, did they just toss them out on the ground?
Yeah, they just... Well, no, I believe they had one of them old four-wheel carts.
Oh, yeah?
And they put them all on there.
Uh-huh.
And then they would have our name on them. We would have to go get them off this wagon.
Were they sorted by your name while they were on the train, do you think?
Well, I just had this packet with my name on it coming out of Portland, I suppose. Because they were kind of wrapped up, you know, in a paper, and
mm-hmm.
with my name on them.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, if there was no man here to supervise that, they just trusted you to pick up your papers? And
well, that's the way it was for a while, and then we finally got... somebody took over. I can't remember who it was. There was a fellow named Robert Bradford. He used to have a service station, and he took over this at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody liked him because he was a bear cap. But I can't remember of anybody else that was doing that.
Well, when it came to collecting time, you had to go around each house.
Yeah.
What did you do with the money?
Well, that's a good question. I'm sure that we had somebody we had turned this money into.
Yeah.
I'm sure we did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once a month?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I just don't remember who it was.
Was it a hassle to go around and collect?
No, not really. People paid pretty regular, you know.
Okay.
We had a few people that, when I'd taken this new telegram, it was clear down towards the river. And the manager would take me around trying to get starts all the time, you know. Well, this fellow would like to take a paper, but he didn't have any money. But I got chickens out here. Can I give you a chicken, you know, for the paper, whatever? Well, this a lot of this stuff went on, bartering, you know.
Yeah.
And so this is the way, of course, I got what little money I got was all right. But this man would give the manager a chicken or whatever they wanted to for the paper, see. And so... he was a pretty good manager. He would take us over to go swimming once in a while, and we all liked him. We got mm-hmm. along real good with him.
When you were in late elementary school or in high school, were you involved in any clubs, Boy Scouts, any other kinds of clubs?
I was in Boy Scouts when I was the first part of school, yeah, Group 112.
Was Harvey Carter one of your scoutmasters?
No, but he was... let me think a minute. He was head of, some club that we was in on. And he used to have a place up on Fox Hill, Harvey did.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go up there and play Steal the Flag. He had an old Model A pickup. And there were about 10 or 12 of us loading this idle pickup. And up the old road we'd go, you know. And then we would take, try to get a wieners or half a wiener roast or whatever goes on up here, you know, after we got done playing the flag. But Harvey was involved in that, and I can't remember what it was all about. I can't remember, but I didn't play any sports. I didn't seem to be interested. And then about the time I was getting interested in girls. So that I think everything went off there. But
was it your impression at the time that Boy Scouts was a fairly big thing in the Valley?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. We had, I can't remember how many we had in that troop, but we had an awful lot of them, quite a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we met down in one of the churches down the basement. I couldn't even tell you which one anymore.
Maybe the Mormon? The building next to the church, the old church?
Well, I just couldn't tell you, Gene. Mm-hmm.
Well, why do you think Boy Scouts were such a popular activity at that time?
Well, I don't know, unless it more or less gives the kids something to do to take up their minds or try to get them to go ahead or on or something. I don't know. I really don't.
Would you meet after school or at night?
Maybe it was like in the evening. Mm-hmm. I believe.
Once a week?
Yeah, once a week. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember with any vividness what you learned? Knots? How to make a fire? First aid?
I don't remember anything that coming, Eugene. I don't remember ever doing anything like that. I don't remember what we did at the meetings. I know we were there every week, you know. But I can't recollect what we done at the meetings.
Remember saluting the flag?
Yes, we used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Related to that, tell me if you could something about your understanding of patriotism in this valley, both then and later.
Well, we didn't pay much attention to it then, Eugene, until World War II come along. Then it seemed like it hit people more.
Yeah.
It did. And of course I didn't turn 18 until June of 45 I turned 18.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of us had went to Portland to take our physical and had passed it. And I didn't want to go in the Army or the Navy, and so I went into Merchant Marine. I was in the Merchant Marine for 18 months.
So why didn't you want to go into the Army or the Navy?
That's a good question. My brother was in the Navy, and he loved it, but I just didn't. I was afraid I'm going to have to do a lot of walking if I got in the Army. And I don't know what the difference was.
Maybe you also thought you might get killed.
Well, everybody believes that, you know. But I wanted to go in the Merchant Marine, so the fellow over the draft board, his name was Jess Rosenbaum. And I had to get a release from him to go in the Merchant Marine. So he signed me a release, and so I went to Portland, the old Pioneer Courthouse in Poland, and there was all kinds of guys there, you know, ready to go. So we got on a troop train and headed for Catalina Island to take our training. So I think that's about the time that patriotism really hit us when the World War II.
Well, back to Union County, you came back here after getting out of the Merchant Marines.
Yeah, right.
And at that point, what did you see as the possibilities open to you for making a living?
Well, about the only thing here in town was the Mount Emily Mill out here,
mm-hmm.
which I eventually went to work at the mill. And that's when I met my wife.
And August Stang was in charge of it then, wasn't he?
He was in charge of it, yeah.
Did you ever see him?
Oh, yeah. He would come over. I worked on the green chain. And he would come over about for every day, you know, and walk around, and he'd wave and all that.
A hands-on manager, huh?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He wanted to see whether you guys were really doing it right.
Yeah. I don't know, but he would come around the mill every day. He would.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember that he looked like?
Well, he was kind of a short, stumpy guy. I mean, he wasn't fat, but he was a short fella, and I remember him being pretty near bald, and that's about all.
Did he speak with an accent?
No, he spoke real good English.
Did he seem to have a sense of humor?
Yes, he did, because I was kind of heavy set when I was working there in the mill. He would make the deal like that at me, you know, and all this stuff. And of course, everybody would laugh, get a big joke out of it. But I want to relate this to you. I used to talk on the radio where I could talk all over the world, you know.
Shortwave.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, I was talking to this fellow in Wisconsin. And I says, we got a fellow out here that migrated from Wisconsin and built a mill out here. And I told him it was Stang, you know, and Mr. August Stang. He says, Bill, I want to tell you something. He says, Mr. Stang was from my town. There's a big library, the Stang Library, right here in this town. And I thought, boy, that's real strange, you know. But I was going to tell Chet this big deal, you know, about this guy from Wisconsin. He told me a big deal of it. August was from where his town was.
Yeah. So, tell me a little more about working on the green chain, exactly what that involved.
Okay, you're pulling green lumber.
From the pond?
No. There's a big chain that comes out of the mill where it's all cut in lengths.
Oh, it's already been cut into lumber.
It's already been
lumber.
Cut lumber.
Yes.
So there's 15 of us working on the green chain. And there's a head end here, and where the lumber comes out of the mill, and you get to the chain, and there's places on both sides of the chain to pull different lengths and different grades. So you got 5 on this side, you got 6 on the other side of the chain, and then you got 3 down below where the tuba-4s and tuba-6s and tuba-8s come down on there. Then you would every half a day you would rotate to a different station. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard work, but this lumber's green, it's heavy, and it's coming knee-deep. And the man on the front end was supposed to try and straighten things out to what he could, but he also had to pull 6 and 8 foot lumber behind his station. But every time he got on this head end, you're supposed to try and straighten things up for the rest of the people what you could, you know.
So were you putting it onto carts?
No, there was probably about a foot drop, and then it was all boarded in. And you'd pile this stuff up, and then they had what they called flat stackers. They would take this lumber off of that and drop down to the ground level and stack it up. I can't remember, probably, I would say at least 10, 12 feet high, and probably 16 feet wide. And then it would go into the dry kiln to dry.
Mm-hmm.
So after you got onto this stuff, I mean, it worked real easy, but you could work your hind end off too.
Yep. It sounds as though it was almost exclusively hand labor.
Nothing automatic about it. No, there was nothing automatic.
Was this coming off the saw that was nearby?
Well, yeah. Where the logs come in and they cut them up, then it would go through two or three different rounds it would come out in what they call 4-quarter or 6-quarter, then would go through what they call a resaw. It would go through this resaw, and then it would go around again and cut it into 4-quarter, regular 1-inch boards. From then on, it would come out on the green chain. And this green chain was probably a good 150 feet long on top. Then it went down to ground level, and then it was another 150 feet down there, and you pull it on blocks down there so the carriers could come along and pick a block load up and take it wherever they want to lay it.
This lumber was, I suppose, 2x4s, 4x6, 8x10, all these different sizes?
Well, yeah, but it was all 2x. 2x4, 2x6, 2x8, 2x20. This resaw cut everything bigger than that down into 4-quarter, what we call a regular 1-4. And the 2x4s.
Most of that lumber was then going to be used probably for building houses and other kinds of structures.
They would take it out in the yard. They didn't dry it 2x4s then. Then as all they dried was the pine, the 4-quarter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these stacks were for. They would run them into dry kilns and dry them. But the 2x4s they put out in the yard and let until they dried, and then they would run everything through the planer. They had a what they call a dry chain. When this stuff come out of the dry kilns, all this stuff would go over on the dry chain, and they would pull it just like we did, and then they had to be a man up here that knew what it was. Number two, number three, number four. He was a grader. Mm-hmm. He had to grade all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then somebody would pull number two, number three, number four.
Did most of this lumber have knots in it or not?
A lot of it did, and a lot of it was clear, what they call select. Mm-hmm. That was pulled in a place of its own, the select and the clear lumber. If it had a C on it, that was a clear board. Or a O, that was a clear and select wood. And then if it had knots, why, it would be number two, number three, and real bad would be number four. Mm-hmm. So I worked out there for about 3.5 years on this green chain.
And did it do anything to your hearing?
No.
It was noisy where you were, I'll
Well, it wasn't actually that bad, because there was a big wall between the green chain and the mill. And we didn't hear a lot of that noise.
I see.
But there was a door there. When you went in this door, then you could hear all this noise. And I don't think anybody wore any earplugs or anything. I ran road grader for 38 years of my life, and I never wore any earplugs or anything, and that's the reason I am hard of hearing.
Yeah. At the time that you were working on the green chain, I'm guessing that if you ever thought about the supply of lumber, it probably seemed inexhaustible. We'd never run out of lumber, because you could see trees everywhere.
Right.
Do you remember any ever wondering whether we'd ever run low on supply?
No, I never did ever think we would, because there was too much timber in this country. And I'll tell you something. And when they first started cutting stang star logging up in the Starkey country, that we used to do a lot of hunting up in that country, and a lot of this stuff still laid there. They would cut the tree down, and they would go maybe 75 feet till they get a limb. When they got to these limbs, that was the end of the tree. It just laid there and rotted. They just took the best cut, and that was it. And no, I never did ever. I still don't believe we will ever run out of timber. I just don't believe it. And nobody can make me believe it, because there's too much timber. I can take you to areas. I worked 22 years for Boise Cascade. I was all over eastern Oregon. And I can take you to places where there never has been an accident today.
An accident?
An axe.
Oh, an axe.
Cutting it down.
Or a chainsaw.
Saw or anything.
Yeah.
So I take you right back here on Glass Hill and show you the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, no, we've gotten exhaustible. I realize they have cut a lot of timber, yeah. But I think this day and age they do a lot of planting, which helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And no, I don't believe we will ever run out of timber. I don't believe we will.
When you took the job at Mount Emily, was it because it was easy to get a job there, or had you thought about other kinds of activities you might do?
Well, the main thing, I was married and I had babies on the way, and I needed a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't easy to get a job down there. We had to go down there every day and stand in line to see if they were going to hire anybody. And of course, this one day they did hire about 5 people, and I was one of them. And that was the job most any that were open was on the green chain, the harder work. And so I was just young punk then, you know, and tougher and bored and all this stuff. And so it worked real good for me. It was hard work, yeah, but like I say, after you got used to it and cut into it, toughened into it, why, it worked real good for you.
Was this 8-hour shifts, 5 or 6 days a week?
From 8 to 5, just 5 days a week. And, well, I say, Mr. Zang come around there quite often. He was around there quite a bit. And he would always wave or talk or stuff like that, you know. He seemed to be a pretty nice fellow.
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Do you remember any conversations with the other men, or what you might have talked about?
Oh, hunting was all our mind. You know, we were all hunters, and oh boy, we got a going to be hunting party this fall and elk hunting and all this stuff. And that was our main conversation was hunting.
What, at that time, I think it's probably changed somewhat since, but at that time, why did the young men you talked to seem to be so interested in hunting?
Well, I don't know whether it was about all there was, fishing too, you know, hunting and fishing. I wasn't a fisherman, but it seemed to be everybody was interested in getting out in the woods and going fishing and hunting and, well, maybe doing a little traveling. Nobody can afford to do much traveling. And so I think hunting and fishing was the main agenda.
So for recreation?
Yeah, right, for recreation mostly.
It didn't particularly matter maybe whether they actually got a deer or an elk?
No.
They didn't need it for food?
No, well, yeah, a lot of them did. I raised my family on deer and elk meat. And what I would, if I hadn't had all that elk meat, well, they would probably wouldn't have had much to eat. Mm. But I raised my four kids on this, on deer and elk meat. But we enjoyed going out in the mountains and camping, and, you know, we're hoping we could get something. So this is just the way life was in them days.
When you were you out for several days at a time?
No, the majority, we would just go out one day at a time until we started. We bought a tent, a friend and I, and we set it up on up above Tony Bay's. You know where Tony Bay's?
Yes.
Okay, we went right up the river and then went up, got off in another road. And we would set the tent up there the first day of before the 4th of July. We'd take it up there the 4th of July. And we would spend all summer long up there every weekend we could.